Madam Clerk, would you please read the next item?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 30, Judiciary, amended by the Senate Judiciary Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Information and Services Available to Pregnant Women and Other Persons and Ensuring Informed Consent Before an Abortion May Be Performed, Except in Case of Medical Emergency. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 30 Hess with the same title, recommending do pass Seaton, Coghill, Wolf, and Wilson. No recommendation Sisna. The report was signed by Wilson, Chair. The Judiciary Committee considered the bill, recommending it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 30 Judiciary with a new title, recommending do pass Anderson and McGuire. No recommendation Samuels, Holm, Guerra, Gruenberg, and Ogg. Two fiscal notes were attached. The report was signed by McGuire, Chair. The Finance Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 30, Finance, with the new title authorized by HCR 36, recommending do pass Meyer and Williams, do not pass Croft. No recommendation Hawker, Stoltz, Chenault, Fate, and Foster. The report was signed by Williams, co-chair. There's three House Committee substitutes.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House Finance Committee substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 30, Judiciary amended, with a new title be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Hearing no objection, we have the present objection. There's an objection. Representative McGuire.
I object and would move that we amend that motion to state that we would adopt the judiciary version for Senate Bill number 30.
I'll stand at ease. Come back to order. Madam McGuire.
Mr. Speaker, I withdraw the form of my previous objection and simply would object and ask that members would vote no to adopting this version so that the judiciary version could be before us properly.
Mr. Minority Leader, I believe you had the first objection. You defer. Heard the comments based on the deference. Is there further debate? Question before the body is the adoption of the Finance Committee substitute. Members may proceed to vote. With clerk, lock the roll. Does anyone wish to change their vote? Representative Fate. ADA. Representative Gatto, Nady A. Anyone else? Representative Wolf, Nady A. Madam Clerk.
12 yeas, 23 nays.
So the House has failed to adopt the Finance Committee substitute, which brings the Judiciary Committee substitute before the body. Representative Sisson. Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, since we didn't get unanimous consent on that, I would move and ask unanimous consent that we, the House, adopt the judiciary version for committee substitute for Senate Bill 30, Judiciary amended version W.A. for the members.
Hearing no objection, we have the G version before us. Madam Clerk, since there are no amendments.
Mr. Speaker, brief at ease, please. I want a copy of the bill.
House stand at ease. Order. House, please come back to order. Mr. Majority Leader.
Just for clarification, it was the House CS for Senate Bill Number 30, Judiciary, the G version, as noted.
Members should have the G Gulf version before you. Madam Clerk, are there any amendments?
There are no amendments to that version.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 30 Judiciary be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
There is no objection. We are. There is an objection. This bill will be held over until tomorrow's calendar. House, come back to order. For those who were betting on how many votes would be received on the Senate side for POMV, if you said six, you lost. It was five. 5-4, 15 opposed. Madam Clerk, would you please read the next item on the calendar?
Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 170 Judiciary by the Senate Judiciary Committee entitled An Act Relating to Murder in the Second Degree, the Justification of Defense of Self or Others, Immunity from Prosecution, Sentencing, Probation, Discretionary Parole, and the Right to Representation in Certain Criminal Proceedings Relating to Violation of a Custodian's Duty Relating to Sexual Abuse of a Minor Relating to Release of Information Concerning Certain Cases Involving a Minor Relating to Local Options Regarding alcoholic beverages, the offense of furnishing or delivery of alcoholic beverages to a person under 21 years of age, and forfeiture of property used in and money or other items of value used in financial transactions derived from violation of certain laws relating to alcoholic beverages, relating to assault by means of a dangerous instrument, relating to operating or driving a motor vehicle, aircraft, or watercraft while under the influence of an alcoholic beverage, inhalant, or controlled substance, to the refusal to submit to a chemical test, and to the presumptions concerning the chemical analysis of breath or blood, and providing for an effective date. The Finance Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 170 Finance, with a new title authorizing new title HCR 40. A zero fiscal note was attached. The report was signed by recommending due pass Hawker and Foster. No recommendation Meyer, Stoltz, Jewell, Croft, Moses, Chenault, Bate, Harrison, Williams. The report was signed by Harrison, Williams, co-chairs. There's one House committee substitute.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent of the House Finance Committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 170 Judiciary with a new title be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Hearing no objection, we have the Finance Committee substitute before the body. Madam Clerk, are there amendments?
I have no amendments.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
I move and ask unanimous consent that the House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 170 Finance be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There is an objection to moving to third reading with the understanding that tomorrow we will return to second reading for the purpose of addressing specific amendments. Madam Clerk.
Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 272 by the Senate Finance Committee entitled An Act Relating to Certain Monetary Advances in which the deposit or other negotiation of checks to pay the advances is delayed until a later date and providing for an effective date. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered the bill recommending due pass Gatto, Roekberg, Dahlstrom, Lynn, and Anderson. The report was signed by Anderson, Chair. The Finance Committee considered the bill recommending due pass Chenault, Bate, Foster, No recommendation. Hawker, Stoltz, Meyer, and Harris. A fiscal note was attached. The report was signed by Meyer, Vice Chair, and Harris, Co-Chair. I have an amendment number one by Representatives Croft and Crawford to page 10, line 10.
Representative Croft. Representative Crawford.
Move amendment number one.
There's multiple objections. Representative Crawford, you have the floor.
Pardon me, I couldn't quite hear. Mr. Speaker, I've known this bill was out there all session long, and I was just hoping against hope that I was never going to get to see it get to this point. Back in the 1930s, around the end of Prohibition and the rise of organized crime, they outlawed so-called payday lenders or loan sharks, and this was outlawed in every state up until the last few years. What's happened now is that people have found a way to come in under the law or around the law, find loopholes to do these short-term loans. And this bill is asking to put in our statutes interest rates from 360 to 520% per annum. And Mr. Speaker, I can't go to my constituents in any kind of good conscience and say that I'm for those kind of interest rates. The amendment we have before us stretches the time from a 14-day loan out to a 30-day loan, which has the effect of cutting those interest rates in half to 180%. The other part of it is a $5 per loan origination fee. That's what gives it the extra percentage. That's just on the first, the original loan. I know I'm butchering this. I just want to tell you that I'm I don't want this to happen. The payday loan industry has really targeted our military bases. I have an NCO update from 2003.
Mr. Speaker, point of order.
Representative Roper.
I believe the member has really explained his amendment to us, but not the bill. I mean, I think he should stick to the amendment.
Thank you. I will. I'll just cut it out.
Representative Croft.
Thank you. On the amendment, I mean, the importance of the amendment is that it extends the pay period. These are typically in increments of $115 per 100 when you rent them, and by the bill set up for the period 14 days, and when you extend it to 30, you have the effect of cutting the interest rate in half. It's very important because these are incredibly high interest rates, and in the $300 to $1,000 range, depending on the fees, and these kind of payday lender organizations target the military population. That's what this prior speaker before was talking about, and it's directly relevant to the amendment we have before us, because the interest rate is what's at issue in amendment number one. And the interest rate that is charged, 300, 400, 500% compounded on a yearly basis, is the problem. The NCO update that he was talking about talks about how, and Alaska, of course, has the highest proportion of military population in the nation, why these high interest rate loans are targeted at the military. And if I can briefly read from that NCO update. Predatory lenders check cash.
Representative Roberg, your point?
Can we stick to the amendment, please?
We're there. Jim Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Predatory lenders, check cashers, high-cost car dealers, and insurance groups will often station themselves around military installations in hopes of grabbing as many hard-earned military dollars as possible. In the end, they can sometimes prove to be more harmful to troops and troop morale than the enemy in the battlefield. Professional scam artists target the military community for specific reasons: its high youth-oriented population, general lack of financial knowledge, steady paychecks, and the constant relocation. Currently, the worst financial offenders to military communities are payday lenders. That's the problem that we're addressing with Amendment Number 1. By taking this interest rate into something approaching something you might get from a bank, it's still very high, but it's cutting it in half and making it that much more fair for the citizens of the state of Alaska, and particularly for the military population here. You know, many states, over 10, I think the number is 14, outlaw this practice. Some, like Georgia, prosecute it aggressively as racketeering. Because indeed, these interest rates, the interest rates addressed by Amendment Number 1, are in the range of what would be charged by mafia-type loan sharking. I mean, it's that type of usurious rate. In fact, there was testimony, and we've had trouble tracking it down, but these exceed the rates that the Gambino crime family charges. And we're going to bless it with this legislation. We're going to take something that may or may not be illegal in this state and sanctify it here today at these rates, with these risks. At the very least, if you're going to do that, you ought to adopt Amendment Number 1 to make these interest rates something near to reasonable.
Representative Anderson?
Wow. Mafia, Gambino family, targeting military. I don't know whether to be offended as the chairman of Labor and Commerce who sponsored the same bill on this body's side, or to act like I think the theater we're in with these comments. I can't even finish the sentence. I'm perplexed at those comments. This is not about mafia, this amendment. This is not about any of the things I think that the last two speakers have asserted. Mr. Speaker, for a 14-day loan, payday lenders typically charge about $15 for each $100 borrowed, plus a one-time $5 origination fee. An average loan is $300, which costs the borrower about $50, $45 for the loan plus $5 for the fee. The profit margin for the payday lender is around 10 to 15%. That's about $5 to $7.50. Extending the loans to 30 days would not be economically feasible or possible for these companies. And again, the last two speakers really extended into the corpus the body of the intent of the bill, which is to help people who can't pay their loans, who can't pay their credit card charges, who can't pay their mortgage, and give them an advance so that they don't incur additional exorbitant fees or default or lose their vehicle. So let's get back to reality, please. I think this is a good bill, and the amendment totally degrades that by putting these companies out of business. From my statistics and from what I know in the packet of the bill, locally and nationally, the loan term is 14 days. So other states are being referenced, but the majority of states have this or less. And if we do this, if we support this amendment, we're going to put these companies out of business, and it won't be feasible. And I'm looking at one statistic here talking about internet payday lenders. And we have to remember that these online payday lenders are totally unregulated, and they will have the advantage, and they charge a much, much higher rate than this bill allows, up to $60 per $100 for 2 weeks. So you're giving out-of-state foreign companies through internet solicitations the advantage and not helping the local person. And comparing this to mafia, I'm offended by that. I take that as a personal offense, because I wouldn't have sponsored the bill if I thought that. And this isn't necessarily targeting military. Yeah, they have a lesser income, but the Cash Alaska stated, they're one of the parties that support this legislation, they stated that the average salary is in the $29,000 range and above. The salary of the person who asked for this loan. So I reject that it's just targeted at military. And there's a Cache Alaskan Spinard. That's not a military base entrance or exit. So I urge you to reject this amendment.
Senator Lynn?
Speaker, I find myself echoing the comments of the representative from District 19. I get very offended when there's some inference made that the military don't understand money matters or interest rates like anybody else does. If we pay our military people more money, maybe they wouldn't have to get these kinds of loans. But these loans need to be available, and I just really reject the assertion that this is aimed at the military, that the military doesn't have enough sense to do the business that they need to do. I'm just offended by the whole thing.
Representative Gunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, previous speakers are referring to this NCO update. The NCO is a part of the ASUSA. Now, I know some of you might not have this organization in your towns, but in Fairbanks, businesses all across town proudly present their sticker in their window as supporting the United States Army and its adjuncts and supporting on their behalf. The president of this organization, and it's a service organization, is General Gordon Sullivan, who's the former Army Chief of Staff. This is a service organization representing Army personnel and their interaction with the community at large. We have heard a lot of discussion about the interest rates in this in committee, and it's really interesting. You know, in some contexts, there's some businesses that if they have to charge a rate like this, you know, they should really consider what business they're in, and if they have to make a profit charging an interest such as this, we should look again. We should look sideways at that. The interest rate is exorbitant. If overhead in some businesses, you know, would the banks actually fund a business plan if you had to do that? So, in this amendment, putting the turnaround time out to 30 days, I think is a little bit of what we can do to help the people that are caught in a trap, because these are people that are temporarily financially strapped. They have a good reason for needing to do this, but they also have no other place to turn, and they're caught in a situation. And if whatever we can do to support that, I think that's something we can do. And the contents of in the context of the mafioso analogy, I don't think is misguided.
Representative Anderson.
Speaker, I hate to do this, but some people are missing that are critical, so I call the House for this vote.
Here's a call placed in the House. Is there any further debate on Amendment Number 1? Representative Fate.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I noticed that we have a tendency to annualize everything. But because of some late mail down here, I got an accounting, and on that accounting I was penalized on a credit card, $30, for a very small delay in my payments. If I would have annualized that, it would have been much more than the fees for a 14-day loan on this particular issue and on this particular amendment. I think it's an error to annualize this. This is more of a fee. It's a very needed fee. The 14-day with the rollover provisions still do not make it an annual loan, which we have a tendency to exaggerate by annualizing the rate of the interest rates. So, Mr. Speaker, I hope the people in this body will really look at this as more of a fee. We pay more in penalties in not paying these things that these types of loans enable these people to pay. So I stand against this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'll have an amendment a little bit farther down the calendar on this because this debate has been so exciting and I wanted to participate a little bit more. But I'd refer members to line 17 of page 10, which talks about a non-refundable origination fee. That is, to get the whole thing going, you're going to charge the guys $5. I've really got no problem with that at all. What I have a problem with is that they're going to charge $15 for every $100 of advance. And I'll talk about that a little bit more with my amendment that's coming up. But There's already an origination fee. And you can call an interest rate a fee, and you can call a tax a user fee. And you can call things whatever you want to call them. But you can't have two fees for processing the loan when one of them is a $5 origination fee and another one is $15 for every $100 that someone's trying to take out.
Ripson Holm.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just real briefly, apparently nobody here has ever written a bad check. I mean, a bad check is a $25 fee. Or 30. Yeah, sorry, we did. You're right. I stand corrected, thank you. The other thing is, if you've ever borrowed any money from the bank, you'll see that there's all kinds of charges, and the charges just go on and on and on and on. So I guess what the point here is that this charge, whether it seems high to you or I, or we, it probably is high. Maybe we don't want to pay it. But as my good friend from District 7 was saying, if you mess around with your credit card payments, don't pay them exactly, your fees go from like 14% to 25 or 26% if you hit the 30-day limit. So I know we have usury laws in the state of Alaska, but I think that this is providing a service, and I would respectfully vote against this amendment.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The credit card analogy is of great interest to me because I find that credit card fee to be outrageous. And so outrageous that in the beginning of the session, or before I started office, I did research to see if we could outlaw that. Credit card companies, limited in the amount they can charge you in interest, have now converted their desire to take excess monies from their customers into this finance fee that we have heard about. And it is an outrageous interest rate, and they've done it under the cloak of a fee when it is really an interest rate. My research so far is that only the federal government can regulate credit card companies. And I hope I find out I'm wrong about that. But just because one company has you over the barrel doesn't mean that we should encourage other companies to throw you over the barrel. Thanks.
Representative Groomberg.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A few weeks ago, it wasn't even that long ago, we were debating a gaming bill, and people were concerned about the problems that can create because people become addicted to overextending themselves at the gaming table. The same principle applies here. People become addicted to overextending themselves in their credit cards and in these loans, and then they become enmeshed in a series of short-term loans. But the result is the same, that they go down into a spiral and they become addicted to using these kinds of businesses that prey on the unfortunate, the young, the unwary, the unsophisticated, the needy, the people who live from paycheck to paycheck, and often not that. It's the same principle. And if people are so concerned about the one, and they should be equally concerned about the other, because I think you will find that at least as many people are at least as enmeshed in this kind of, and it is a kind of gambling. They're gambling that they can pay their bills. They're gambling that they can keep themselves afloat, often with more than one job. And they get themselves in terrible situations, and people take advantage of them. And what we're saying here is exactly the same thing that people said less than a week ago. And we need to make certain that people are not taking unfair advantage of such people. And this amendment will go away towards doing that.
Presence.
I have a brief piece.
How standard is?
We're running.
It changed. Mr. Anderson.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I lift the call, but I urge the body. I'm doing this because a member and a technical procedural thing. It's better that I lift it for his sake, but I really urge the members to stay and help vote yes or no, but stay. Uh-oh.
There goes Rips and Wyrock. Is there any further discussion on amendment number uno. Seeing none, members may proceed to vote. Reflect the roll. Does anyone wish to change their vote? Madam Clerk?
12 yeas, 27 nays.
So Amendment number one has failed to pass the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Now, Mr. Speaker, once again I find myself in that place where I have to apologize to a member of the body. But before I do that, I'll move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Kukesh be excused from the call of the House from now until 5 p.m. plain time Sunday, May 9th. And this is due to a funeral, and it was the intention to do that at 3 o'clock this afternoon, and due to circumstances somewhat beyond my control, some of it's Alzheimer's. That was not done.
And, Mr. Majority Leader, some of that's poor sight. I can't see that far, but with the leave of the body, I would ask that the Chief Clerk show that Representative Kukesh be shown as excused from the call of the House from 3 p.m. on. Representative Croft, Madam Clerk, are there further amendments?
Amendment number 2 by Representatives Croft and Crawford to page 2, line 14.
Representative Croft?
Move amendment number 2. Well, you didn't have to do that on this one. This is an innocent
objection. All right. Geez. Representative Croft?
This is simply trying to regulate the internet sites as well, so we put the word physical before location and then say or internet website. We hope and think that we can use this law to limit some of the payday loan sites that are on the internet. It's obviously got a tremendous amount of practical difficulties, but in talking to the Assistant Attorney General who works on consumer protection, the idea was that he thinks there's no federal prohibition. He thinks you can prohibit them from operating in the state unless they comply with your laws. And if they make loans that don't comply with the law, we can go after them in various ways. So this simply firms up the way to go after the very internet websites that the sponsor of the version in this body referred to in his presentation on amendment number 1.
Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I objected because I'm going by committee discussion on this, and it was stated that the word physical is not needed because location, the word location means physical location, at least it was testified to in, I guess you'd call it, bank law terminology. And the intent is clear without the added word, I think, in the bill. Mr. Sniffen, I don't want to speak for him on the floor here, but the Assistant Attorney General testified throughout the process and worked with us on the bill, my version, but similar to the version before you. And there may be a Commerce Clause prohibition of this. I'm not sure. I'm not an expert on that clause. But I don't think we need the fix, and I think we are fine the way it is stated. And I'm going to defer to testimony that I heard in committee and say reject this at this point. If there's a major problem, we can come back in another session. Thank you.
Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This just mirrors what they've done in the Georgia law. I don't know if this is going to, fix it, that it hasn't had enough time to be tested, but I don't see any reason why we can't try to guard against the abuses that the sponsor of the bill talked about just a few minutes ago about the internet sites that charge up to $60 per 100. Do we want that? I mean, this is been sold as a consumer protection bill, then let's protect consumers and bring internet website users under it as well.
So further debate on amendment number 2. Representative Fate.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And even though I agree with most of what has been said here relative to the usury through the internet, it does become problematic because, as I understand it, even though there is a suit going on in Georgia, has been mentioned here, this particular amendment, if there were a cause of action and it were found invalid, it may invalidate the entire bill. And this is not what we're trying to do. This bill is to try to regulate an industry that has had no regulation. And because of that, Mr. Speaker, I would not want to vote an amendment that might invalidate this bill if it in fact did pass and if it were a cause of action to test this in court and it failed. So thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to respond to my friend from Fairbanks who just spoke, I would refer him to page 14, line 11 of the bill. And that provision, if I may read the sentence, Mr. Speaker, please. Relationship to federal and other state law. If a provision of this chapter is preempted by or conflicts with federal law in a particular situation, the provision does not apply to the extent of the preemption or conflict. That's called a severability clause. And that would apply here. And there's also a general severability clause in Title I that says if a provision in any law is unconstitutional, it shall not affect the remainder of the law unless it cannot be severed. And clearly this little provision could simply be severed. The amendment here that they're offering could clearly be severed from everything else. So there's no danger to the bill.
Representative Croft, in disagreement?
Yeah, in something. Thank you. Responsive. I'm a little mystified by this. I expected a substantial discussion. We had one on Amendment Number 1, but confused, frankly, by the objection to Amendment Number 2. Let's take them in order. We're putting physical before location. I guess the concern would be you're being too narrow and you wouldn't be able to prosecute those payday loan agencies that have no physical presence in this universe. I mean, that by putting physical before it, we wouldn't be able to prosecute the metaphysical or theoretical payday loan organizations. That we'd have this gaping hole of the imaginary payday loans that you couldn't go after. I suggest that if there's some sort of payday loan that has no physical presence on this earth, I'm not really concerned about them. Part two, or internet websites, we wanted a second ago, a brief shining moment ago, to go after them. They were a major danger in three or four speeches past. And now we don't want to put the words in? We know it's severable. We know it can get there. Which of the two aspects of this is problematic? I suggest there's no, I don't really care, I guess. You could take physical out or in. It does seem to me we're talking about the physical location or the internet and making a distinction between the two. And I would like to see, I'd like to know whether the Assistant Attorney General can stop some of the more egregious internet sites from operating in this state, or at least scare them enough that they may have to comply with these and other laws that are in other states. So the amendment clearly with the severability harm does no harm to the bill, and I think it allows us to proceed against and do some good.
Are you ready for the question? Question before the body is the adoption of Amendment Number 2. Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, clock the roll. Anyone wish to change their vote? Madam Clerk.
22 yeas, 16 nays.
And so Amendment Number 2 passes the House. Madam Clerk.
There's a new Amendment Number 3 being duplicated.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'll move new Amendment Number 3. And I would imagine it be circulated, but just for the members' edification, the guts of it are in Amendment 3 as it sits in front of you, with the exception that I retained the origination fee. Well, during all this conversation about usury and high rates of interest, I went and looked at the usury statutes, and lo and behold, there are statutes that pertain to what we're trying to do. And I understand the need for an origination fee. That makes sense to me. I'm not objecting to that $5 fee. But then I look at 45.45.010, and if I could read subsection B, Mr. Speaker, it says, interest may not be charged by express agreement of the parties in a contract or loan commitment that is more than 5 percentage points above the annual rate charged member banks for advances by the 12th Federal Reserve District. Okay, so we know you can't charge more than 5 percentage points higher than the annual interest rates. But there's also another section here, 45.45.080, which is titled money lenders may collect interest in advance. And there's a section in there which I think is really important for us to know about. And if I could read it, subsection C1. No additional amount may be charged or contracted for on or in connection with an installment loan provided for, except the following. Delinquency charges not to exceed 5 cents for each $1 of installment more than 15 days in arrear. 5 cents for each $1, for more than 15 days in arrear. Except that the total delinquency charges on an installment loan may not exceed $15, and only one delinquency charge may be made on each installment. Now, this law has been on the books in this state in one form or another since 1951 with an amendment in 1968. So we've dealt with this issue. We've established what the fair rates of interest are, the fair rates of return. And I understand that we might be trying to afford some protection for a new group that wants to come up here, but let's stick with the old, true protections that exist in the law that we have. Let's not commit the biblical sin of usury. And I would submit that the amendment I've offered, maybe someone might want to massage it when it gets to your desk, but that's the appropriate course we ought to follow.
Is the objection maintained? Representative Rugberg.
Oh, yes, absolutely, Mr. Speaker. Not knowing a lot about this area, I would say this. That this type of practice goes on in the state now. So anything in the statutes currently relate to this type of practice does not prohibit the current type of practice nor the level of rates that are offered. So I don't believe that this forthcoming amendment or what's embodied in amendment number 3 on the table really relate to the current type of payday loan practices which is occurring in the state. Frankly, Mr. Speaker, I think this is a bill killer and would just run these people out of business. And so I strenuously object to this amendment.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I'm just looking at notes from the maker or the sponsor of the bill, the rules chair from the other body. And one thing I want to make clear, when we express the rate in opposition to the bill, obviously by their amendments, they're opposing the bill itself, when they express rates of interest for a 14-day loan as a per year or an annum rate, a scenario he used or a hypothetical, he said, it's like saying catching a cab to go from Juneau to Seattle. No one would do that. No one would pay that fare. No one would that I'm aware of, would incur that type of fee to do that. And they compare, in the committee process, there's been comparisons to that. No one would let this rate go per annum. And it was reminded to me by a member supportive of the legislation on the IDs that we have to think of how many people default on these loans and don't pay them back, and there are a lot. And if you extrapolate out what the ultimate rate is when people pay back their obligation within a two-week period, it's very small. And for those who let it pass and continue it to roll over, it can add up. But the majority do pay, and like the previous speaker said in opposition to the amendment, our body's rules chair, you're going to hurt the business. This is another, we've had a lot of these amendments throughout the day where it could gut a bill and ruin it and make it not worth, I mean, I wouldn't have sponsored the bill on this body's side if this amendment passed, because it hurts these businesses. So I urge you to reject this amendment and let's get to the bill itself. Thank you.
Further debate on amendment number 3. Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would maintain that these businesses are hurting Alaskans. We looked up on the internet just how many lawsuits and small claims courts belong to the payday lenders that are in Anchorage right now, and it's about 3,500 that are out there. I don't know exactly for what length of time or if that all of them were for payday loans or maybe possibly Ponds as well, but they're about 3,500 out of the 8,000 total that are on the dockets for the small loan, small claims court, or belong to the payday lenders. So, as far as the assertion that it's going to hurt these businesses or drive them out of the business, I'm not sure that they're doing such a great service for Alaskans. I have a service through the Alaska USA where I get a credit line loan if I happen to write a check that I don't have the money in it, then the credit line loan takes over, and I pay 14.9% per annum. So if I pay that off in 4 or 5 days, the amount of interest is just a tiny fraction of that 14.9%. That's the kind of cab that I want to take to Seattle. I don't know why we would want to encourage this sort of business. Way back in the 1930s, we outlawed this sort of business all over the country, and now we're letting it come back in. It baffles me how in the world we could say it's okay to charge 360% or 520% interest rates. I'm astounded that we can sit here and say that this is all right and okay. And we've got a usury law in the state right now that's 24% to 36%, depending on the size of the loan. I think that it served us well and should continue to serve us well. There's a lawsuit out there right now against one of these payday lenders that will decide whether it's legal under our law. This bill that's before us is trying to head that off to make sure that they can make this business legal before that lawsuit is decided. I think we should hold off and wait till the lawsuit is decided. Thank you.
Mr. Manurlier.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker. There's an old case in Alaska, Metcalf versus Bartrand, 491 P. 2nd, 747, 1971. And the basic holding of that case is that usury laws are designed to protect the necessitous borrower. We write the laws to protect the borrower. Yesterday was a National Day of Prayer, and I haven't read my Bible as much as I should have, as recently as I could have, but I recall prohibitions against charging too much interest. It's in the Bible. It's not just in the statutes. We shouldn't do this. We shouldn't charge fees that are too high for people who are poor and need money. We just shouldn't do it. It's not the right thing to do. And I'm sorry that some businesses might not get the protection they need from folks who are unable to make payments. That's the risk of business. We're setting up the laws that they should follow. They will know the risks that they're undertaking. They will choose to make the loans or not to make the loans. But the folks that are desperate and need the money, or uninformed and need the money, those are the people that need our protection. And that's who we're writing the laws for. So I'd urge us to accept this amendment, to embrace the laws that have been held in this state for, now I can say, generations. And let's just do the right thing for the people that need our help.
President Anderson?
I'll be very brief. Minority Leader talked about that's the risk of business. If you pass this amendment, then you are taking away any profitability to these companies. And so in short, that risk of business that you impose extends to your utilities, landlords for rent, car dealers, mortgage companies, and the list goes on. I mean, if you impose this, you might as well vote down the bill. Then there'll be no regulation at all, and internet lending will be rampant. And then, as a policymaker, I think you'll regret it even more so. So I say it's not the risk of business. I say you allow some level of profitability. I mean, these you're making it sound like these lenders are millionaires from this service, and I don't think they are. Far from it. But I think they offer a service that helps people who need to pay their debts. Sometimes there are defaults. Sometimes in other states there may be preying on the military, but I don't see that in Alaska. So I urge you to reject this and allow the bill to come forward soon enough where we can actually regulate this as well.
Is there further debate on amendment number 3? Question before the body is the adoption of Amendment Number 3. Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, lock the roll. Does anyone wish to change your vote? Madam Clerk.
12 yeas, 26 nays.
So Amendment Number 3 has failed to pass in the House. Madam Clerk, are there additional amendments?
I have no further amendments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for Senate Bill 272, Finance Amended House, be considered engrossed, advance to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There is an objection. This bill will be held over until tomorrow's calendar. Madam Clerk, would you please read the next item?
Committee substitute for House Bill 563, Judiciary, entitled An Act Relating to Legislative Branch Ethics to Open Meeting Guidelines Applicable to Legislators to the Confidentiality of Complaints and Proceedings Involving Alleged Violations of AS 2460 and to Hearings and Formal Charges by the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics or its subcommittees. The bill's in third reading.
You ready for the question? Question. Representative Rugberg.
Mr. Speaker, just as a point of information, I'm having the latest version handed out. I noticed some members, because this bill wasn't distributed in the original package, may not have had it. So I want to make sure that they have the S version in front of them. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there debate? Representative Guerra.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that we go back to second reading on this bill for the discussion of amendments.
Without objection, I would like to return to second reading for the purpose of addressing each and every amendment so that we don't go back and forth. And we'll return to third. Representative Guerra.
Brief at ease, Mr. Speaker. Thanks.
House stand at ease.
Do you have any?
Back to order. The House will stand in recess for 10 minutes. Susie, have you read this one? That's right. Prior to the at ease, we were under discussion on House Bill 563. We returned to second reading to address all the amendments. And with the possibility of all of us having a potential conflict in this issue, since this matter applies to all of us here, we are all excused from voting. There's an objection, so you will be required to vote. Madam Clerk, would you please read the First Amendment?
Amendment Number 1 by Representative Garrett to page 2, line 10.
I move Amendment Number 1.
There is an objection, Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So just to explain to the body and apologize, the representative from Spinard and I had talked about an amendment that he had worked on that would have resolved all of the following amendments, so the thought was that he would introduce that first, and the only thing that got in the way of that strategy is that he has lost that amendment. So. So here we are. Mr. Speaker, the bill as it reads and what this amendment does to the bill has to do with this subject. In concept, the bill says that we're going to allow the public access to our meetings when we discuss public issues, legislation, other matters of state policy. And the public has certainly demanded access to hear us debate those things. On the other side, there's a provision in the bill that says if the discussion in the meeting is strategy, and these are caucus meetings, if the discussion in the meeting is strategy, then the caucus gets to close it. The problem with that is that the bill then goes on to say that if there's a mix of both strategy and the discussion of public issues and legislation, then the caucus can still close the meeting. So if you look at page 2, at lines 10 and 11, it says one of the reasons that you can close a meeting, one of the reasons that a caucus can keep the public from hearing what's going on in discussions between legislators is that if there's a discussion of issues in the context of political strategy. Well, that's a confusing term. And what it allows, as written, is for one of our caucuses to discuss legislation, things that the public should be able to hear, discuss more legislation, more things that the public should be able to hear, then discuss some strategy relating to those issues. That would allow a caucus to all of a sudden close that whole meeting. And the rational response to that would be to say, if we're going to keep this dividing line between things the public should be able to hear, which is the discussion of issues and our views on the issues, and matters of strategy, which the sponsor of the bill wants to keep closed, then what you would do is say, for the strategy portion of the meeting, you can keep that closed. But for the discussion of the issues, the discussion of legislation, the discussion of public policy, the discussion of a legislator's views on these things, that part remains open. And that's exactly what Amendment Number 1 does. It doesn't let you close the whole meeting just because a little part of the meeting had to do with strategy. In the worst case, what a caucus would do would cover a whole meeting that addresses things the public should be able to hear about with a sort of peppering of strategy at the end. And we don't want that to happen. So I would appreciate your support for Amendment Number 1. And I think Amendment Number 1 would move this bill a long way towards an open meeting statute that the public would be supportive of.
Representative Roberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe the maker of the amendment makes the argument fundamentally against his own amendment, inasmuch as adoption of this particular amendment would virtually open up every caucus or any other legislative body that would be would have the right under current law or under this particular proposed revision of it to a complete opened meeting, notwithstanding whatever was being discussed. And that would defeat the purpose of the original initial statute passed over 10 years ago and would create enormous difficulty in a free exchange of ideas. Mr. Speaker, what we're going to be talking about this evening is the problems we have when we intertwine the discussion of any public policy in the state in the context or related to a political strategy. And it might be easier to just relate this to a discussion on the budget. When we discuss, that is clearly a policy issue, and how we structure that budget in the context of its political strategy, it has to be discussed and reflected upon in terms of its political strategy many times. I would agree with the maker of the amendment that there are certainly occasions where there is open discussion or there's discussions that should be open to the public. I believe the adoption of this bill before us is going to make a modest revision in how we operate in our caucuses. I truly do. And I think we need to be more cognizant and be aware of how we conduct those, because the original intent of the open meetings law is to provide a level of openness to the public when we're talking about general policy matters. But when we talk about them in the context of a political strategy, we have the statutory right, and it's legal, to be able to discuss those principles or those ideas in the context of political strategy, and we should be able to do that. This particular amendment defeats that purpose, would virtually open up every meeting, and that is not the purpose of the original statute nor the revisions before us, so I would ask that we defeat this amendment.
Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think that's a fine idea. I agree with the rules chairman again. I think we ought to open up virtually every meeting that we have. If we can't say it in public, if we can't say it with a reporter standing right there listening to us, if we can't say it where the people of Alaska can hear what we have to say and be proud of what we have to say, then we shouldn't say it. So I believe in this amendment. I think it's the right thing to do. And as far as strategy, I think about the only strategy that we might want to keep behind closed doors is can't think of what it might be. It's a fine idea to open the doors. I support the amendment.
President Croft. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If I don't know what goes on in the closed caucuses that are called for political strategy, or sometimes just not even called with that excuse. So I couldn't tell you. In fact, you could tell me maybe. But if the primary purpose of those, the primary purpose of those meetings is the discussion of legislative and state policy, and we're not able, as the public, and me, one of the public excluded from them, to see that, that's a problem. If you can't adopt this amendment, then the practice has been wrong all these years. If you can't adopt the amendment, then you're not going to have a bill that does anything of consequence for open meetings. You're going to have a sham here. If we can't at least say for meetings that political strategy can't include meetings whose primary purpose is discussion of legislative policy, then there isn't any open left in this open meetings guidelines. We're going to determine over the next series of amendments whether this legislature is serious about this or playing a game. And why can't we say political strategy can mean whatever, but it can't mean meetings whose primary purpose was legislative? This is the first of a long series and what's going to be, I think, a long night. But the reason for this amendment done this quickly, or this bill done this quickly with this many amendments and this quickly to the floor, is we've for some reason are not waiting for the recommendation of the Legislative Ethics Committee, which just met today on this issue. But so we've got to treat this very seriously, and we will determine over the series of these next amendments. And this is one key telling point, I think, for the public. If we can't at least say whatever political strategy means, it can't mean primarily for the purpose of legislative matters, then it's not really an open meeting guideline.
Representative Kapsner.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think it's fair to say that all of us are in the business of public policy, not public policy behind private doors or private policy that deals with public issues. One of the definitions in ethics class of unethical is something that has the appearance of impropriety. When the majority of members go behind closed doors to talk about public policy and public issues, issues that affect the public, I feel that that has an appearance of impropriety. That's not to say that impropriety is taking place, but it sure appears that way when I'm on the other side of those closed doors. I stand in strong support of this amendment.
Representative Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As we go through all, if you give me leave a little away from this particular amendment, but for all the amendments in judiciary last night, and this comment is going to reflect to all of the amendments here, it is easy for all of us to look at our minority and our majority as the only two caucuses we're talking about here. But in judiciary last night, there came up a couple of examples that as the comments and the arguments are made, you should look beyond that. And the two examples that I thought of, and I tried to be bipartisan when I thought of these examples to make sure we didn't set anybody off here, one would be the Bush caucus, and one would be, as Citizen Samuels, last year reading the newspaper about a lot of you, the Fiscal Policy Caucus, who met off campus, if you will, at somebody's home, behind closed doors, talking about public policy issues affecting the state. And from my opinion, for that particular group, it was probably a more frank and honest discussion of the political realities for the individuals and the political realities for the issues at hand. So as we go through these amendments, I sincerely hope that the debate does not go into the majority versus the minority in our particular situation, but we think of the other groups. The Bush caucus at times has been an extremely powerful bipartisan, you know, bicameral force in the state of Alaska for decades, as the Fiscal Policy Caucus also had some other issues. So as we go down, I hope that the debate centers around a bigger, broader thing than just our particular minority and our particular majority right now. Thank you.
Representative Ogg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaking to the amendment, I think the language that the proposer of the amendment is talking about appears on page 1. On page 1 at the bottom, line 13, it says, talking about open meetings, it says, or if a primary purpose of the meeting is a discussion of legislative or state policy. And when we get to page 2 and go to section C, that's an exception from that policy. So I think that by placing this amendment, defining an open meeting again in the exception really doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense to me, and I'm going to oppose it.
Ms. Minerleader.
I think we need to take a step back here and think about what we're trying to do. I mean, this is all about transparency, so the public can see into what we're doing. And the reason why we have caucuses and the reason why people do it behind closed doors or off campus is, frankly, because folks are afraid. They're afraid that their vulnerabilities will be exposed and subject to political tactics or political strategy. They're afraid that their political weakness will be exposed. And they're afraid, I'll tell you from the minority perspective, is what we do is try and surprise you guys sometimes. And if the element of surprise is taken away from us, we don't have the ability to see that our interests are served. But I don't think we should ever let fear drive us. Now, the experience we've had in our caucus, and I wish we were better at it than we are, but we've been primarily open. We're not always open, but primarily we're open. We have these frank, embarrassing conversations sometimes. But it's a process of getting used to it. And I found in our experience that folks that are newer to the process and come into it and start to see it, start to trust the openness of the process a little bit. I don't know if we ever get to a point where there's never any closed door meetings, or there probably never should be. Negotiations require a give and take. They require, as my friend from Saxton will attest, sometimes raised voices and before they eventually yield to handshakes. But you've got to get there at some point. But those are not what this contemplates. This amendment talks about discussions of legislative or state policy, whether one caucus is getting information about a certain subject matter, oil taxes, or some kind of any subject that the caucus might want to learn about, but done in a caucus context. Those should be open. I mean, would you want to have that information, the freedom of information, to learn what was going on at a national level? Are you curious about what the other caucus would be thinking about something? That should be open. One of the problems we have, and we saw it very visibly tonight down the hall, is that folks are afraid because we haven't had these conversations out in the open at all. And so it's a surprise to the general public when something pops out of a caucus and winds up on the floor. And I think the more we can be transparent, the more we can force our doors open, even when it makes us uncomfortable, especially when it makes us uncomfortable. I think we'll get to a point then where the public trusts us more. And this is a great institution. I'm always honored to serve here, but this is truly a great institution. And we're just one of hundreds in the country. But I think we ought to have the courage to try and lead with openness here. There's not a lot of people in Alaska. Most of us will probably at some point tell our friends or our spouses what went on in a closed caucus. So why not just open the door? Let's be a little bit uncomfortable. Let's not surrender to the fear that keeps us closed. Let's be as transparent as possible. And let's support this amendment.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. 2 points. One is kind of technical, but it really does have some substantive aspects here. And that is the term legislative on line 6, and also the same term on line 14 of page 1. I believe the amendment is intended to track the language at the bottom of page 1. And if the members on Judiciary Committee particularly could follow along with me, the language at the bottom of page 1 on line 14 was Judiciary Committee Amendment Number 5. If you have your bill packets from last night. And I happen to have that amendment. And this term at the bottom of page 1, line 14, is a misprint. The word should have been legislation. That was the word we adopted. And we had a meeting last night. And that word was legislation. And I believe that probably should be the word on line 6. But I'm not going to make that amendment without talking to the manager of the bill, the author of the bill, and the author of the amendment. But I just call that to the body's attention. Having sat as a member of a majority caucus a number of years ago, when our party, the Democrats, were in the majority, and sometimes with coalition, if I may bring my own perspective to that, our caucuses were open. At first, in 85, 86, they were not. And we were frankly shamed into it by some of our members. And we opened the door. And a few people would come in, reporters would come in and hang out in the back, and occasionally somebody else would come in from the other party, and they'd be welcomed, and we'd have dialogue, like occasionally that happens here, because we have our open caucuses as a minority. And the minority, by the way, at that point, the Republican minority, had their caucuses always open, too. But if we had to close them down for political strategy, we would close it down for a portion of the meeting and then reopen the doors. And that the second sentence here allows that to be done. And that was really important because the policy was to keep the caucuses generally open and only close them down as necessary. And we were able to do that. And I think that worked well. The press seemed to like it. The public seemed to like it. And we got along fine. And for what it's worth, it worked well. And this second sentence here is the sentence that says, however, if the primary purpose of the meeting is the discussion of legislative or state policy, at least that portion of the meeting must be open to the public. That makes a lot of sense and would frankly give the caucus, and I'm talking primarily to the majority caucus if they choose to close, would be give them more flexibility and I think would be a good management tool.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mrs. Speaker. Looking at the section to be deleted, it seems like in many ways you could include almost anything under there. When I step back, think about what it was like in earlier times when I wasn't involved with this body, reading the newspaper, hearing things all of a sudden emerge, trying to track legislation, all of a sudden something emerges in the paper, an issue came out. You always wonder what happened. Where did that come from? Where was the discussion? Many times these days, our constituents and our friends and our families ask those questions. Where did that happen? Where was that discussion? I think it's imperative to have it in having an open society, having an open process, that it's transparent. The section that's being deleted seems to close down most of that. In the minority caucus, where the door is mostly open, I look at things that we're discussing and often say to myself, "Is you know, should the door be closed? Should the door be open?" But generally think even when we're talking strategy, people that walking down the hall in and out of the room would mostly be bored with what we have to say. Why do we have to think what we're saying is so important to other people? You know, if you call home now, people take consideration of what they're reading in the paper about what we're doing here. They don't think the world revolves around this building. They're trying to put food on their table. So when we close things down, we're shutting people out for something that they're not paying as much attention to as we think. But when they realize something's come out of nowhere, we're creating a cynicism that simply shouldn't be there. Thank you.
Representative Guerra.
Mr. Speaker, I do want this amendment to pass, and the member from Mountain View is correct. There's a typo in the amendment, as there is in the bill, so if I could just correct the typo on line 6 of the amendment, I would move an amendment to the amendment and change the word legislative to legislation.
Is there an objection to the amendment to the amendment? Seeing none.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
the direction we take on this amendment, I think, is going to dictate the direction we take on this bill. We're either going to make major reforms to the way the legislature does business in a way that would make a major change in the public's access to its legislators, in a way that would give the public a much greater look at what we do and how we do it than we do right now. We'll either make a major change or, as the rules chair says, we'll make a modest change. I think he's correct in seeing this bill as a modest revision to the way we do things. I think everybody in this body, all of us, need to make a major change. You know, the example was used of the Fiscal Policy Caucus and how delicate issues were discussed more easily behind closed doors. It's hard to tell somebody where you stand on a tough issue. But our job is not to debate only those things that will get us reelected. Our job is to debate the toughest issues, even the ones that might get us unelected. And our job is to discuss those things so the public can hear them and decide whether or not they want us back. The representative from Kodiak thought that maybe the amendment was confusing. We in the Judiciary Committee just saw this bill for the first time just the other day. And that's how we spent our Cinco de Mayo till 10:30 at night, was debating this. Section B talks about what meetings are open. Section B, I think, is written in a pretty decent way. Debatable, but pretty decent way. It says what meetings are open, the ones where you discuss legislation, the ones where you discuss public issues. Those are open ones. But then Section C on page 2 talks about what you can do to close your meeting so nobody can see what you're doing. And that's the one that says if you discuss strategy in the meeting, even though you're discussing lots of other stuff that the public should be able to hear, if you're discussing strategy, all of a sudden you get to use that as the cover to close the meeting. And what we are doing is just asking that the legislature operate the way virtually every public committee that we hear about in the country operates. You hear about executive session. That's when groups go in to caucus behind closed doors and they discuss personalities and things like of that nature behind closed doors. And maybe that's okay, but the discussion of the issues, then they come out of executive session and they discuss that in front of the public, and that's how we should do it. So it's a strong and easy to figure out distinction. And the only question is whether or not in meetings where we discuss legislation, whether we're pro-choice or pro-life, whether we want an income tax or a sales tax or nothing like that, whether in meetings where we discuss all those things, we can close them by just at the end saying, oh, and by the way, let's talk some strategy. So the part that involves the debate of the issues that the public wants to hear about should be open. We can debate whether we should also close for strategy. That's another debate. But the public issues, the legislation we're here to decide, the legislation they sent us here to decide, the legislation that we ran on when we knocked on their door and when we campaigned, why not let them hear what we have to say about those things? So if this amendment gets voted up, I think we're going to take a long way to coming up with a bipartisan fix to a big problem. If this amendment goes down, I think we're going to take the wrong road on this issue of open meetings. We might as well call it the fairly open, somewhat open, maybe a little bit open meetings act.
Ms. Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question here because I'm reading now on line 12, at the end of line 12, it says when a majority, on page 1, when a majority of the members of a legislative body is present and action, including voting, is taken or could be taken place. Well, you know, when we're on this floor, there's a lot going on, but every time we have a disagreement, we take it at ease, we all get together in a little huddle, and the public can't hear what's going on. I would like to know, is that mean that we can't take it eases now, and then we're going to have this all open? I'd like that clarified.
No Eddies. Have some craft.
Yeah, but very briefly, I hope so. You know, and not just because we get frustrated with Eddies, but because it's frustrating for the public. The fundamental question we're going to address in this amendment, in the bill, and the amendments that follow is, are we going to conform open meetings guidelines to legislative practice? Or are we going to conform legislative practice to open meetings principles? And it's why we're keying so much on on where this amendment goes. If you say we don't do it that way, so we can't write it that way, we're not doing what the open meetings guidelines asked us to do, what the open meetings law asked us to do, what the people's initiative that spawned this whole development does. It, if done right, it has to change some of the practices around here. And if we simply write a law that conforms to the practice we already have, allows us to do everything we ordinarily do, we are not doing justice to open meetings principles. That we should try and be better in this area and try and write rules that force us to be better, because we know the people want this, and I think we know the people deserve this.
Representative Jewell?
Just a question. I don't know where it fits, because I sit on the Bush caucus, I sat on the fiscal caucus. Would we have to post those meetings?
Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In answer to that question and some of the other comments, that question, which caucuses are covered by this act, I think we need to address, because that's in a separate section of the bill, and we need to address that at some point. I think it's very vague the way the bill's written, the caucus section, which caucuses are covered, which ones aren't. It's an important issue. This amendment really just addresses of those groups that we think should hold open meetings, and we can decide which groups those are later. Certainly the minority and certainly the majority, maybe others. But of those groups that are required to hold open meetings, when are we going to require them to do that? And I think the answer to the other question is, do you have to post notice? I think the rules chairman would say only for those ones that the uniform rules require you to post notice for. Thank you.
Mr. Rugberg.
Call House, please.
There is a call placed in the House. I'll satisfy the call. Is there further debate on amendment number one? Seeing none, Representative Rugberg.
Oh, Chairman, Mr. Speaker, I just would, as long as we're here watching the clock tick, in response to the member from Cotsby, I just say that the member from downtown Anchorage was correct that the uniform rules would prevail. Typically, however, caucuses per se are not required to post notices because they're not, frankly, covered by our uniform rules. There was some discussion in the Select Committee on the Ethics Subcommittee about that, but this amendment before us, of course, and the other provisions of the bill and the current law don't require that.
Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Speaker, maybe to save a little time and ask a little leave of the body, if we could make, as you will recall, we amended this amendment to correct the typo, and I'm wondering if it would be in order, while we're standing by, to make the same technical correction to change on line 14, page 1, the word legislative to legislation. And I would offer that as an amendment. I guess I can't do that while we're under call, can I? Okay, I'll withdraw.
Further debate, amendment number one.
Mr. Speaker, I'll just take this opportunity to, I agree in large part about the, when the member from Bethel talks about public perception. That's a very important point. I think we are going to be making some strides in terms of our conduct and how we conduct ourselves by passage of the bill before us, frankly. And I would say that, what we have to recognize is that the ethics law was passed well over a decade ago. And at that time, there was a major change of direction and policy. And in the main, I believe that the legislature has acted in the spirit of the open meetings law as provided in the exceptions to the statute for the legislature. For example, we've made and conducted ourselves in a manner that I believe, in the main, protects our ability of free speech and our First Amendment rights in terms of the strategies in which we are acting. When we've avoided votes, we do not do those types of things. So that's when the change occurred. But I think that there is a need to re-examine this, to sensitize ourselves to the public demands, and also conform our conduct so we do meet those principles and more closely adhere to the law. I would agree with that. Mr. Speaker, I lift the call.
Call is lifted. Is there any further discussion on amendment number one? Seeing none, the question before the body is the adoption of amendment number one. Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, lock the roll. Does anyone wish to change your vote? Madam Clerk.
15 yeas, 22 nays.
So amendment number one has failed to pass the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Moses be excused from the call of the House for the remainder of the calendar.
Without objection, Representative Moses will be shown as excused from the call of the House the remainder of the evening. Madam Clerk, are there any additional amendments?
Amendment number two by Representative Garrett, beginning page 2, lines 5 through 6.
Move amendment number two, Mr. Speaker.
There is an objection, Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This amendment would just prevent any of the caucuses from making really, well, frankly, cute arguments to run around the provision in the beginning of the bill. The bill says if you're discussing legislation, if you're discussing public issues, the meeting is open. But you can imagine that somebody might try to get around that requirement by saying that it should be closed because strategy includes discussions of how you're going to argue an issue. Well, how you're going to argue an issue is a discussion of the issue, and that's what the A part of this amendment does. It says that's still an open meeting. You can't call that strategy. And then the B part of the amendment says this. It's also not the kind of strategy that lets you close a meeting if you start discussing who might support the bill, who might oppose the bill, who might campaign against somebody else during the legislative session to try and change their mind. You can imagine that during a caucus you might say that maybe we should go get the Pro-Choice Alliance to go work on this legislator because the Pro-Choice Alliance supports this bill, or maybe we should get somebody from the oil industry to go work on this legislator because the legislator might listen to the oil industry because the oil industry's views on the matter might be persuasive. Maybe you start talking about a donor and how the legislation might affect a donor. We just want to make clear that things that you and I and all of us know are really discussions of the issue that people should be able to listen to. We want to make sure that nobody tries to cloak those things as so-called strategy and therefore close the public out of discussion of those matters.
Representative Roberg?
Mr. Speaker, I believe that this amendment mirrors, although it's different in its substance, but its impact is the same. Or I should say it's similar in substance to the prior amendment, albeit it's expressed differently. This, again, would virtually open every meeting, and this generates this problem, as the member from downtown Anchorage points out, when we would have portions of a caucus discussing a issue of substance and then in the context of political strategy and then move out of that and then move back into it. The fact that somebody couldn't express whether they are for or against something within the context of the strategy, I don't think is defensible. I mean, we need to be allowed to do that. It's just not a practical thing. I do agree, however, we need to examine our practices.